You're listening to the public feed of Carefree Highway Revisited, which includes only a portion of this conversation. To hear the complete discussion, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or see the show notes for details.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
I'm standing at the doorway, my head bowed in my hands, not knowing where to sit, not knowing where I stand. My father looms above me, for him there is no rest. My mother's arms enfold me and hold me to her breast. They say you've been out wandering, they say you've traveled far. Sit down, young stranger, and tell us who you are. This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates Gordon Lightfoot's music song by song, a proud member of the That's Not Canon podcast network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan from Montreal, Quebec, Jerry Candiston. Jerry, welcome to Carefree Highway Revisited.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, how did you get into Lightfoot's music originally? That's my hazing question that I have for all my new guests.
The World's Fair, Expo 67, was held in Montreal in 1967, and there had been one song that I remember being played on the radio called Spin, 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 and I was at the Canadian Pavilion one afternoon with friends and stumbled upon someone named Gordon Lightfoot. I seem to remember Spin, 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 so we stayed and watched the show. That was 1967, probably August. In 1968, I saw him in a small Montreal coffee house known as the New Penelope Cafe, which is long gone. Mm-hmm. And by, I would say, end of 1968, I was smitten. And it's been uphill ever since.
That's fantastic. So you really saw him very much in his own backyard in Yes. Montreal, and then I guess in Toronto after that. And you've stayed a fan ever since. And what is it that you enjoy most about his music generally?
His words, his ability to capture Mother Nature, his ability to capture the one-on-one relationship, and the music and his magic voice.
Yeah, that pretty much says it all right there. You talked about seeing him at the World's Fair in 67. Have you seen him in any other concert situations?
Maybe 30 or 40 times. I've seen Gordon in Montreal every time he's played Montreal. I just saw him last August. He was a little frail, but he still got a standing ovation from everyone, and there were tears in most of our eyes when he came on. I've seen him in Toronto at Massey Hall. I've seen him in U.S. cities. I've had the joy of attending a charity event at the Grant Hamilton Recording Studio where Gordon recorded most of his late 70s and 80s albums. There was a charitable event, and I was one of a lucky 12 people to sit in the studio and just chat with Gordon and his band members while they played songs and took requests and talked about their guitars and their strings and their bass guitars. It was terrific.
That's fantastic. And then you and I had corresponded a little bit about you having met him and spent a little bit of time with him. Can you tell us a little bit about how that went?
I first met him when I was at McGill University and worked for the radio station as an activity and had a backstage pass and went and interviewed him in 1969 or 1970, forget. And I've somehow managed to correspond and keep in touch with his various managers, and I always get backstage passes. And as I say, I met him and spent 3-4 hours with him at the recording studio that night. I've met him at charitable events. He's a very, very well-spoken, back-home type of guy. There's no inhibitions. He's not trying to put on airs. He's just a very, very nice guy. He engages in any conversation. Loves to talk about his music. He's just a lovely guy.
You know, a lot of people have said that Lightfoot doesn't radiate celebrity in a way that other musicians of his generation maybe do, either deliberately or they just have that aura. And that Lightfoot really is non-pretentious in that. It sounds like that's a sentiment that you would agree with.
He's just a back home Canadian boy who was brought up in a small town and had a talent and took it to the upper limits. But when you talk to him, he'll talk to you about anything. He engages. He's very forthright and forthcoming. Just a nice guy.
Well, today we're talking about Sit Down, Young Stranger, and it's one that I heard him perform at the Mountain Winery in Saratoga, California, not long after I got married. And I have my own reasons for liking it, but why did you want to talk about it in particular today, Jerry?
Well, it was originally the title of his first Warner Brothers Reprise album, which for him was an important milestone. Gordon had had Bob Dylan, Peter, Paul, and Mary's manager, Albert Grossman, and Grossman negotiated him away from United Artists because they didn't feel that he got enough U.S. airplay off of United Artists. So after five albums with United Artists, this was his big breakthrough. He was paid $1 million signing bonus, which in those days was unprecedented. And this was going to be his breakthrough album. In fact, it was. His title tune was Sit Down, Young Stranger. And I can see why. It was a very subtle anti-war song representative of the generation gap that had divided America at that point. And he thought that that would be the title. I was surprised that they never released that song as the single on the album. They released Me and Bobby McGee and later If You Could Read My Mind, when it went from a deep cut on the album to a top five song that made them change the title of the album. But I always loved Sit Down, Young Stranger. I just thought it resonated so beautifully. It was a subtle protest song. Several years before, Gordon had written and released Black Day in July, and he thought that was going to be his U.S. breakthrough single. It was highly political, and many of the U.S. radio stations refused to play it because of the sensitivities of the Detroit to Watts riots at the time. So this was a much more subdued approach. As a Canadian, he didn't feel that it was his place to preach politics in a country that he didn't live in. And he was always very deferential to the U.S. in general and the record market in particular. And he was taught a bad lesson, I think, by Black Day in July. So this was a protest song. It was clearly anti-war. It was clearly representative of the terrible generation gap that developed in the U.S. Because of the Vietnam War. And that's what it's about.
Yeah, it is a protest song. There's no doubt about that. But it's as much about the generation gap and the relationship between parents and children,
yes,
as it is about anything political. It's more really of a sociological song than a political one. I'll talk in a minute about his attitude towards talking about American issues from a Canadian perspective. But I see it as being in the same league with Cat Stevens' Father and Son, where you have these two male figures or these two people, and they're talking to each other but they might as well be talking past each other, because you don't really hear a whole lot of really joint statements. There's a little bit more connection between the parents and the kid in Sit Down, Young Stranger, but not by much. Do you have any anecdotal stories about the song at all, Jerry?
Well, I've seen him play it live, I don't know, maybe 3-4 times, I'm sure. I've always liked the words that he chose when they say you've been out wandering, they say you've traveled far, sit down, young stranger, and tell us who you are. When you listen to how those words hit you, it's clear that there's this generation gap, partly over war, partly over everything. He's kind of lost as the youth in that song. He doesn't know where he's going. You know, it's not necessarily the youth is right and the old people are wrong. It's, gee, I'm young and maybe I don't know what's going on. It's just a fascinating set of lyrics.
It really is. And I like the fact that it's sympathetic to both the parents and to the child.
Yeah.
It's not a song where you say, oh, go on, Gordon, tell them all, sawed off. And it's not saying to the parents, okay, well, if you were at Kent State, you'd get what you deserved or something like that. So it's really lovingly done, and it especially at that particular time when emotions were so high, it takes a certain level of sensitivity to write a song like that. What to you is the best time or setting to listen to this? I mean, could you listen to this at any time, or is there one particular time or place or season or whatever that your mind goes when you're listening to this?
I always say, what's my favorite Gordon Lightfoot song? And I do have favorites, but I say it's the one I'm listening to at the time. Same thing. When's the best place or time to listen to Sit Down, Young Stranger? I guess the answer is whenever I hear it. It can be in my car, driving to the office, driving home, driving on a trip. It could be in my living room. It could be through headphones in bed at night. No matter when it is, I like the song. I mean, I love all his music. He's had a profound effect on me. But this song in particular stands out.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a particular place for me, but it would be during the daytime. I always think of this as being something where he's coming home in the late morning or the early afternoon, and they're having this conversation. So it's not dusk, but it's not like it's 8 o'clock in the morning and, hey, I'm going to wake you up. But I like what you said. David Crosby, whom we just lost this past week, said, was once asked, you know, what's your favorite song of all the songs you've written? And he said, the next one. So it's kind of the same kind of thing we were talking about. Well, according to Nicholas Jennings' biography of Lightfoot, he was working, as you said, on this first album for the Reprise label in his house on Blythewood Road in Toronto. He was writing 12 hours a day for 30 days, and he wrote 35 songs in that time, including this one. And he said in the liner notes to the songbook collection, he said, and I'm quoting directly, "It's a protest song. I wrote a few protest songs, but I felt it was kind of silly for me to write protest songs being a Canadian. After all, people could say, what the hell is a Canadian doing protesting against an American problem? It's tantamount to cashing in on a sensitive American situation. But I decided to do it in a subtle way. I think this one really worked, though, because I knew what I was talking about. 3/4 of the way through it, I hit on the core statement, war is not the answer and young men should not die. Everything I say before that leads up to that observation. It just works," end quote. So I think you're right that he had a certain sensitivity about it. The word America is not mentioned. The word Vietnam is not mentioned. So in that sense, it is transferable to a few different contexts. Now, the historical context, and I teach history for a living. I didn't live this history, and I don't know if you did either. But America is terribly divided in 1969 and 1970. There's just been the assassination of MLK.
And 2023.
And in 2023, certainly, but for somewhat different reasons. The assassinations of MLK and Bobby Kennedy. The Vietnam War, Richard Nixon's been elected on this idea that I have a secret plan to end the war, which we know now was bogus. Shortly after he gets inaugurated, he decides to bomb Cambodia after he says, I'm going to stop the war, and here we are widening the war. This is 1 month before the invasion of Cambodia, and then a few days after that, you're going to have the killing of students at Kent State.
Don't forget that before his election, LBJ had a peace plan, and Nixon found a way to veto it.
Correct. He was able to get messages to the North Vietnamese through some contacts he had in country saying, you know, hold on, you're going to get a better deal from us would from Johnson, which is full of intrigue. We won't go into it right now, but that's true. Well, that's all the time we have for Here in the Public Feed. If you'd like to hear the rest of this conversation, along with all of our other extended and bonus episodes, become an FM Plus subscriber. Sign up in Apple Podcasts or at fmpods.com. You can see the show notes for details.